Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by Sam, and we're going to be talking about the TV ratings for the 2020 to 2021 season, such as it was. It was an odd season.
It absolutely was.
I felt like a lot of the shows I watched this season were picking up the pieces from where they just kind of abruptly left off last season.
Yep.
Having to deal with, you know, all the challenges filming during the pandemic and stuff. And it just felt like it was a short season for most shows.
Well, it was. Yeah. It's quite simply, it was.
I think a lot of them handled it reasonably well and stuff, but definitely I think they had some major challenges they don't normally have. Now, did they do the standard time frame for the ratings and such like that, even though a lot of shows kind of didn't kick back in until, like, I don't know, January or something?
Yes. The quarters, the year, that stuff doesn't change.
Okay. I wasn't sure if they had, you know, if they were to quote-unquote start the season when, like, the shows actually start, or if it's just, here's the calendar.
Yeah, it's kind of here's the calendar. That said, much of the fall season, so normally television kind of gets four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And September, October, November this year, which would normally be the first quarter, tended to be dominated by, I guess the nicest way to say it is filler.
Mm-hmm.
Different networks tried to do that in different ways. And yeah, it wasn't until the second or third quarter that we really kind of got to see something more akin to normal, and even that wasn't exactly true.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk about some of the filler ideas and what worked and what didn't and all kinds of things.
Well, the other thing that was different is my understanding is they kind of skipped pilot season this time around.
For the most part, that's true. Pilot season's been shrinking now for years. The money for pilots isn't quite there like it once was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that's pre-COVID. Yes, a lot of newer shows this time around were ordered direct to season, or they were postponed mid-season replacements, or in some cases summer shows from the previous season.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there's some different things happened there.
Well, and I didn't really follow the upfronts too much this time, but from what little I read of the coverage, I got the impression that network television was being treated as, we still have that too, but not kind of the big focus it used to be in you know, years gone by. Is that accurate? Did I just read a...
Boy, it is semi-accurate, and it's accurate in certain ways and not in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on which network you're talking about, heads and everything at the upfront spent a lot more time talking about ancillary other things, which were more talking points for the press than, I mean, ultimately, the upfronts are still, hey, we've got all this ad inventory to sell.
Mm-hmm.
We want to sell this ad inventory. And while the various CEOs and program directors and stuff can go into those press junkets and talk about, oh, and, you know, we're so excited about this streaming platform or this idea or this movie network or whatever, they still have got to sell that ad inventory.
Right, right.
So what the press reports and what they kind of do for PR as opposed to what they're actually telling advertisers are kind of very different. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, and I think they're at the point now where they're trying to perhaps balance selling that ad inventory and stuff with promoting their new streaming services, or new-ish in some cases.
Well, and that's the other thing, and this is just kind of generically true in a lot of businesses. There's a lot more public knowledge of what used to be kind of considered industry events.
Yeah.
So therefore, you're not necessarily talking to the same people you once were, and those sound bites and stuff get out to a much different audience, and therefore you kind of got to regulate that for the audience that may end up getting them.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the number of people that are paying attention to the upfronts, either directly or just through all the articles of here's the shows that are going to be coming out next season and such. It's different now than it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, certainly.
Yeah, it's very different.
You know, I think we've got I don't want to say a more educated audience in that respect, but a more aware, a more interested audience in that respect of, you know, what's coming down the pipeline and how soon will it get here.
More educated in knowing a little bit more when things are announced, when they're going to be absolute. More educated on how the business actually works, probably less so.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I was saying more interested versus educated, yeah.
Yeah, and they can be fooled by a lot of things. There's a lot of spin put on them. And, you know, again, ultimately ad rates are still ad rates. And they're priced per 10,000, 100,000, whatever. And that's still a portion. No longer is it also the huge portion. It used to be that made up, you know, a network. You know, it would make up 80% or more of network revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's probably more in the 40% to 45% range. So yeah, there's a lot of other things involved there as well. Networks' carriage fees are so important and make up so much of networks' revenue, which is odd to say for broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of a fact. The number of people that have an antenna or use an antenna is very small. And more importantly, the idea that since we are broadcasting, we should just give it away to satellite cable companies, etc., as, you know, for PR and more eyeballs, is completely gone.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure those companies are saying, we're producing all this, yeah, we're broadcasting it on the air, but you're selling your cable service, why aren't we getting a piece of that? So,
yes.
I mean, I still hear periodically about how in, you know, certain areas, you know, channel or something's taken off the air, it's contract negotiation time between the carrier and the channel and stuff.
And that used to happen with cable channels, which that was always their business model. But yes, we begin to see it more and more with broadcast networks, which was unheard of at one point because, you know, broadcasters would just give those feeds because as people took down their antennas and had cable, they still wanted to reach them.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's a little more, hey, wait a minute, why don't we get a piece of that cable bill?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely the business model is changing.
Absolutely. And I don't think anyone really knows. There's lots of people that have ideas, but I still don't know where we're really going to be, you know, in the future. Ultimately, what we talk about, scripted programming,
mm-hmm.
is not beholden to time slot, any of that stuff like it once was. Fox as a network kind of figured this out or made business moves that showed it kind of before anyone else when they sold off their studios and kind of said, yeah, we're going to broadcast still, but we're putting a lot more focus on live sports, events, and, you know, things that you still need broadcasting.
Right, right.
We'll see if that changes with some of the streaming services. Amazon has done more in that regard than many of the others,
mm-hmm.
getting football contracts and things like that, wanting to get involved in that kind of the live event side of broadcasting. But, you know, ultimately, when the Super Bowl's on, you still got to broadcast. You know, the Super Bowl doesn't do you a lot of good on Netflix for the next 6 months.
No, no. There's some stuff. And again, those live events like the Super Bowl are as it happens things, not I'll stream it in a couple of days or a few months later kind of things.
Exactly. So, yeah, networks are having to focus more and more on those things.
Well, and it makes sense, too, because that's an area they can compete in that I think the streaming service are in an inherent disadvantage in.
And like I said, Amazon in particular just signed an NFL deal I believe next year will be like the exclusive home of the Thursday night NFL games, which is, they've had them. They've shared those rights with the Fox Broadcast Network for the last few years. But this is the first time, if you want to watch a live football game, you have to go to a streaming service.
Interesting.
Facebook has been involved in bidding. They've had some events, but they haven't, nothing major that I can point to where they outright were the only.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, Amazon, who's also been pawing and prodding at this area for a few years, like I said, that Thursday night football contract is definitely a game changer.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, Amazon, I think, definitely has the infrastructure to be able to handle the kind of load of everybody saying, oh, I'm going to watch it right now kind of a deal, just because they've got a huge tech stack behind them.
Yeah, and that being said, you know, myself, the Super Bowl happened to be with CBS this year.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an antenna and I can get the networks over the air, but I, for the Super Bowl, since it was on CBS and the CBS Paramount Plus now, has the live local CBS affiliate as one of the things they offer.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I watched the game. I didn't turn my antenna on. I opened up the CBS Plus app and just hit live local affiliate.
I'm just curious how some of these other streaming services, like say a Netflix or something, would do if a huge percentage of their customer base all hopped on at the same time to watch either the same thing or different things, how well their technical infrastructure would handle that load.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it kind of is one of those things. It is what it is, and we'll see as time goes on how those things change. Netflix, a few years ago, kind of pawed and prodded at the idea of streaming. I believe when they originally signed David Letterman, the idea was that was going to be like a live show. Sure, it would be around for streaming, but And it didn't work that well. I believe they tried it with something else, too. I believe there was a female comedian that they thought could do, like, a late-night talk show on Netflix. And I don't think that ever ended up quite working out. So they seemingly have tried it and gone away from that idea. But like I said, Amazon is trying it. Disney with Hulu is pushing more of their live broadcasts. Again, they're pushing it more as becoming a cable provider and offering, you know, a cable bundle through Hulu. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I think whichever streaming service can capture the kind of that immediate now audience, you know, when they want to and how they want to and stuff, is going to have a definite advantage over the others.
Yeah, and again, ABC, Disney, we've seen again with their, with Hulu and with Disney Plus, but the example I'm going to use is Disney Plus. With shows like Mandalorian and WandaVision and, you know, Winter Soldier, they were very much, oh, they are out on this day.
Mm-hmm.
And they got covered more like a show at a normal time slot.
Well,
people would watch it that day. They'd talk about it all week, look forward to the next one.
I think that's a difference of releasing on a weekly cadence versus dropping all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding is they were dropping it like midnight that morning or something.
Yeah, it being on the West Coast, if you're a real nut, me being on the West Coast, it tends to be an advantage because most of the major offices for these companies are on the West Coast. So yeah, most of them tend to show up about midnight. So, you know, if I couldn't sleep on a Thursday night, I could watch the new Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little harder if you're, you know, in New York and that's 3 a.m. instead of midnight.
Yeah. But it's not like they're expecting everyone to flood to it the minute it drops.
That is true. But, again, as we saw kind of press coverage, the way we saw the buzz, you know,
people
in offices, it felt more like, oh, yeah, this is a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
absolutely.
It's Friday. Have you seen the new one yet?
Well,
which is...
It was a weekly show. And I think they captured the buzz very effectively on those shows.
Yeah, which is very different than Netflix, who's kind of always going with the, we're just going to put the entire season out all at once with shows like Stranger Things, you know, those types of shows.
Yeah, I think where Netflix has probably the most growth opportunity is a better kind of search experience and discoverability experience, because they've got this huge back catalog, some which rotates in and out and such, But if they can constantly be putting new and interesting things in front of people that they're going to like, then they're golden. Whereas I think for some of these others, again, Disney is trying to make that appointment TV kind of concept back. And again, Mandalorian, Falcon and Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Loki, they've got a lot of this material that they're definitely doing it.
Yeah. To Netflix credit, arguably they have some of the best algorithms out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around longer, they're more robust, and frankly, in many cases, they're just better. As far as being able to match people with things they think they enjoy, Netflix has a huge jump on those other services. Again, that being said, that weekly cadence seems to be working for Disney, and it might be something Netflix goes back to as opposed to, oh, you know, on whatever date the new season of Stranger Things will be out. Get around to it when you get around to it.
Did Netflix really have a period where they would do stuff on a weekly cadence for a show, or... I
don't think they have ever tried.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't recall that, but like when they dropped the second half the first half of Lucifer and the second half of Lucifer for the fifth season or whatever mm-hmm. it's on, again, that was boom, here are all the episodes at once.
Yep, and that is all. That's always been their model.
Yeah, the fact they split the season in half was a little bit of a surprise.
Yep, but it was a significant 6-month gap, as I remember.
Oh, yeah, at least, if not longer.
It wasn't like a week or two. It was. Again, Disney, well, Hulu more specific, back to even before they were multiply owned, before Disney kind of owned about right,
mm-hmm.
had messed with that method more. Arguably, HBO messed with that method more also in earlier days. Now, a lot of that had to do with the fact that they did still have a normal broadcast cable station. So, like, when Game of Thrones was at its peak, if you had the HBO streaming service, it would appear... Usually, I believe, the evening after the show had aired on the HBO cable network.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, again, some of the other, you know, and HBO Max, I guess, is what the Warner Brothers service is now called, has stuck with that. They're still doing regular weekly shows or releasing things on a weekly, you know, on a basis like that. Like I said, Netflix kind of tried it with the event thing. They thought about it mainly in like the talk show area, and I don't know how well it worked and just decided against it.
Yeah, but I can't imagine a talk show dropping a season at once.
No, and that said, shows like Jerry Seinfeld, Comedians in Cars and whatever, I do know people that are still discovering that show, and will just mm-hmm. go back and watch a whole bunch of them. Yes, a nightly talk show that kind of focuses on comedy around current events and stuff probably doesn't work as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's one thing to have, you know, two people talking again, like the Seinfeld show is a great example of that. That's not timely. You're there to see those two people hang out.
Yeah, and again, David Letterman, I believe when they first signed him, that was that idea too.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's just become a store of interviews with David Letterman and whoever he happens to be interviewing.
Yeah, those are, again, more interview-type shows of some sort than what we think of, you know, the standard late-night talk show with The Tonight Show, you know, the stuff that Colbert is doing or Fallon or, you know, any of those guys. Because, again, they're there to promote a current band or TV show or movie or something. You just can't record those and then drop them all at once. It doesn't work.
No, exactly. For PR reasons, it does not So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Netflix changes, if Disney changes, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is what it is. Everyone's kind of feeling it out.
I guess the big question I've got is, while we're seeing, you know, some evolution and stuff on the streaming side,
mm-hmm.
this year with the pandemic and the odd scheduling and stuff like that on the broadcast side, was there any noticeable change in the ad revenue? Did it tighten up? Is it, you know, do they have less money to budget for some of these shows? Was there any noticeable change in that regard?
Viewing is down significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And that is fairly across the board. And there's, we can talk about a whole host of reasons for that. There's a lot of theories. There's, you know, it is what it is.
I mean, we've talked before about how it's dropping kind of every season just to begin with.
It is, yeah.
Add the extended break between seasons this time, getting people kind of out of the habit of watching. Mm-hmm. That certainly can't help.
No, absolutely it didn't. And it also forced people two alternatives to regular television viewing in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people who hadn't tried some of the streaming services or had them but would go to them very specifically, oh, I want to watch a movie tonight, let me look, to doing that day after day after day for a while they were locked up. Certainly changed some habits.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see in a couple of years what the long-term impact of this kind of stuff's going to be.
Yes. And again, events and those things still, there is a home for event viewing, live viewing. And it's not just sports. Reality competition shows, which tend to do very well as well, also fall into this category.
Now, how were those sorts of things impacted by the pandemic? Did we have as many either event shows, be it like an awards thing or reality competition kind of a thing?
Most of them had bumps, but they were able to return. Well, first off, I don't want to say easier because, well, that's kind of true. They can be produced more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So as time allowed, they were able to get back faster.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know, again, if something like, you know, America's Got Talent or American Idol or those types of shows, once they were allowed to go back to filming and, you know, whatever rules were in place, they could start producing fairly quickly. Whereas with, you know, others, you got to deal with production. Now you got to write it. Then you got to deal with rehearsals. You know, and so it was just a slower. It was able. Unscripted things are just able to be produced quicker.
Yeah. Shorter turnaround time. And some of that also may depend on the nature of the particular show.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, if there's a song and dance number, they need a little time to learn that. But if it's just, you know, Who's Got Talent kind of a thing, and you're cranking through as many different people with different talents as possible, you could film a lot of those back to back.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So there's a lot you can do on that.
You know, and again, shows like The Bachelor and, you know, like I said, when I say reality competition, at kind of, it's a broad spectrum.
Yeah, it is. It is. Absolutely. Well, do we want to start taking a look at some of the networks and seeing how they did?
Sure. Yeah, I don't. How do you want to go through this? However you want, John.
We can just go through the networks alphabetically and see what there is to see.
Do we want to look at, like, the top five overall? Really,
yeah, sure. Let's start with that.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and go through those, and after you go ahead and start, and I will make a comment about number one very quickly.
Okay, so the top five overall started with the Equalizer on CBS.
Yep.
I have not actually watched that one.
I have not either. Here's what I can tell you. You'll notice that average rating of a 1.39 is the highest. However, that show aired six episodes in season. Or no, I'm sorry, seven. The last six averaged on 0.78 average rating. That 1.39 average is completely dependent on the 5.08 lead-in it got with over 20 million viewers right after the Super Bowl.
Ah.
So that one is a little bit of an outlier, not really the most watched show in the 18 to 49 demographic by any stretch.
Right. But coming in after the Super Bowl and stuff, it definitely had a leg up and huge advantage there. Okay, that makes more sense.
It had one huge rating, and then very, you know, again, a 7.8, the rest would put it, where is that, about 12th?
Yeah, about the outside the top dozen.
Yeah. So
it's not too bad, but certainly not number one. Yeah,
exactly.
And rank number two, we've got 9/11 on Fox,
mm-hmm.
followed by Grey's Anatomy in rank number three for ABC. That one I've been hearing a fair amount of buzz on this season, just because of how they handled the COVID pandemic and such. And then rank four is This Is Us, and then rank five is Chicago Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, so those are kind of the top shows. Again, The Equalizer, I think, has got a bit of a caveat. 9-1-1 has done very well for Fox, and if you go down to rank 9, you will see its spinoff, Lone Star. And again, if you look at 6 and 8, you will also see the other two Chicago shows.
Yeah, it looks like that franchise is doing pretty well.
Yeah. So yeah, both that franchise and the 9-1-1 franchise are doing very well for those networks and studios.
Cool. Head over to ABC?
Sure.
I don't know that there is a single one of these shows that I was watching. I mean, I used to watch Grey's Anatomy in the early seasons, but...
There's a few of these there's one I watched every episode of. There's a few others I sampled, and there's one or two I used to watch as well.
Let me guess, The Conners is the one you watched every episode of?
Nope.
No?
The Goldbergs.
Oh, The Goldbergs.
I have not watched The Conners since the namesake star left the show.
Okay, okay. So, Grey's Anatomy topping the list, not too surprising there.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Station 19 seems to be doing pretty well for them.
Yeah, and that's I believe that's a fire station show, you know, similar to like Chicago Fire, one of those shows we used to see.
Yeah, like the old emergency show back in the 70s or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, they do those periodically. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. That one seems to be working. And we've got the Goldbergs that you mentioned, the Conners. I do find it funny you have it listed as season 3, 4, or 13, depending how you count.
Yes. Well, if you count all of the original run of Roseanne, this is the 13th season.
Mm-hmm.
It is the fourth season since the relaunch, and the third since it's been entitled The Conners.
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of funny they've got their equivalent of legacy numbering to a degree.
Yes.
Then we've got The Good Doctor, and then Big Sky. I think my sister may have mentioned that, or I've heard about it somewhere. I haven't watched that.
I have not watched it. It was kind of on my list, and I never got around to it. I believe that's David E. Kelly's show. Let me double check that. Yeah, that is David E. Kelly's return to television.
If it's the one I'm thinking of, it seemed like it had a couple of big name people in it, or at least names I recognize.
Yeah, I'm not particularly familiar with any of these names, but that kind of is what it is. But yeah, this was David E. Kelly's return, and apparently these are based on a series of books called The Highway by C.J. Box.
Okay, haven't heard of the books, but at least they've got material to work from that probably doesn't hurt.
They've got apparently a semi-successful book series they're based on, and one of the top showrunner writers heading the show from a number of years ago.
Cool.
Again, David E. Kelly probably most famous for Ally McBeal.
Mm-hmm.
But he also did The Practice, Boston Legal, and a few other shows that weren't quite as successful. Also written and directed several fairly well-known films.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch The Practice. I've seen some episodes because my sister was a fan of that, and I did watch all of Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that quite a bit. American Housewife, I know nothing of that one.
That is Kathy Mixon's sitcom. Was on for 5 years. This would be its final season, but yeah, it was a sitcom.
Okay,
starring Katie Mixon.
And then The Rookie is the cop show with Nathan Fillion. I watched the first episode or two of it, and it was fine. It just wasn't something I felt the need to continue with.
Yep, fair enough.
We've got Blackish, which is going for 7 seasons and getting renewed for final season. That's good. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Home Economics. I don't even think I've heard of that one.
I don't know that much about it. That was a new sitcom.
Okay.
But, yeah.
It's at least getting renewed.
It is?
It's funny, because it's not doing that much better than Rebel right beneath it, which is marked as canceled.
Well, but Rebel is an hour-long draw.
Ah, got it. That's got to be more expensive, and you want a bit more of a return on the money.
Well, plus you've got Grey's Anatomy and Station 19 up at the top. So again, you've got shows fighting for the same hours, which is different. Again, if you count the dramas above Rebel as compared to the dramas below it, while looking at Home Economics, you'll see that's a kind of different number.
Yeah, but it's not that huge of a difference between Rebel and, say, The Rookie, which is the next drama above it on the list.
Yes. Again, that's a first season show versus a third season show. The Rookie was coming back.
You're right. You're
virtually
right.
Regardless.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Same thing with the one just below it.
Which is a Million Little Things.
Yep.
Again, third season, you've talked about how at that point it makes sense to renew to get towards the syndication type stuff.
Yep.
Mixed-ish, first season, which is apparently canceled, as is Call Your Mother and For Life. I have not. I've heard of Mixed-ish. I think that was a spinoff.
That was a spinoff of Blackish.
Uh huh.
Call Your Mother was a comedy. I want to say starring Kara Sedgwick, played like a mother moved out to Southern California from the Midwest to check in on her 20-something kids.
Mm-hmm.
And For Life, was it its second season? It was a legal drama that never was that successful. Apparently it had some kind of... I think it was based around a premise of someone who had been like wrongly convicted and got out and became a lawyer working on similar type cases or something like that.
Okay. Again, hadn't hit my radar, and for a second season show, it's had a little more time to do that.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay. So, really, I guess Grey's Anatomy is the only Shondaland show still around these days then, right?
Well, she's over at Netflix. I don't know.
Ah, that's right.
I believe she's got a show or two over there. I think she's got one that's already begun, and I think she's got another one coming up soon, I believe.
I imagine Grey's will keep going as long as the star wants it to keep going.
Sure, as long as they can figure it out. But again, when you say the star, I'm not sure who that is.
Ellen Pompeo.
Been a few of them.
Well, she was the lead originally, and she's still on the show. I think she may be the only original one still on. Maybe there may be a few others. I don't know.
I thought she left at some point.
I thought she's been the title character the whole time.
Fair enough.
I could be wrong. I haven't watched it since like fifth or sixth season.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't remember. I believe James Pickens Jr. and Chandra Wilson have also been on since the beginning.
Okay. They've had a number of people rotate in and out of that show, so...
Yeah, but they had some other kind of big names. I know Sandra Oh was on for quite a while. Patrick mm-hmm. Dempsey was on for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, they have had some turnover.
Well, 17 seasons, you're going to have that.
That is true.
For all kinds of reasons. I mean, they want to move on, the actors want to move on, you know, whatever. So yeah, it's going to happen. Shall we move over to CBS?
Sure.
There are actually a couple of these shows that I've watched. Starting at the top of the list, of course, we've got The Equalizer we talked a little bit about already. Who's the star of that
one? I actually don't know much about that show at all.
I mean, I was familiar with the original with, Edward Woodward?
Well, Edward Woodward was the 85 show, and you've got the Denzel Washington movies from not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Queen Latifah is the star of that show.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And again, it's, you know, head and shoulders above all the rest on this list. But the next item we got is FBI,
mm-hmm.
which is in its third season.
Yep.
I don't think I've watched any of that, so I know nothing on that.
Yeah, another police procedural as, you know, there are so many of those on television.
I figured from the name it was a procedural of that sort, yeah. And then we got NCIS, which is on its, just finished its 18th season. Wow.
Yeah, that. Yeah, there are some really old, really expensive shows that have just been on the air forever.
Well,
they're some of the top watched things, so that's why they will continue to be.
Yeah, yeah. If you can keep it going, why not? You know, you just got to keep a few of the key leads and rotate other people in and out. Because again, 7 or 18 seasons, they've had people come and go.
Yep. Again, yeah. I believe at this point, Mark Harmon's the only one that's been there the whole time.
Wow. Yeah. Then. The top comedy on this list for CBS is Young Sheldon. 4 seasons, that's not too surprising. It's getting renewed. We've got The Neighborhood. I don't watch many sitcoms, so I'm not going to...
Yeah, The Neighborhood is Cedric the Entertainer's sitcom.
Ah, okay.
I really enjoy that show. But yeah, as the next one, Bob Hart's Abishola, which is Chuck Lorre's, one of his other shows.
Ah, okay.
I believe Chuck's on this list here on CBS at least 3 times, if not more. I know Young Sheldon's him. Bob Hart's Abishola's him. Mom was him. Be Positive was him.
Okay.
I think he might have done United States of Al, but that one I'm not sure of.
Okay. So let's see. After Bob Hart's Abishola, we've got NCIS Los Angeles, 12 seasons in. On that spinoff and a ways down, we've got NCIS New Orleans, which has just completed 7 seasons, and I guess that one's ending?
That is, yep, that was the 7th and final season, yep.
Now, they're replacing that with Hawaii?
Are they? If so, I'm unaware.
I thought they were. I could be wrong on that. Or maybe they talked about it. I don't know if they're going forward with it or not. I hadn't paid that much attention. So, Mom, after 8 seasons, is ending.
Again, a show that survived a lead actress leaving, at least for one season. That was Anna Faris's show when it started.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother played by Allison Janney, and they kept that show going after Anna Faris left.
Yeah, when you lose an actor like that, particularly on a sitcom, which is so much around the chemistry of the people and such, that can be hard to recover from.
Actually, the show was really well done. But yeah, I thought it continued to be good. But yeah, it clearly, 8 seasons, again, not bad at all.
No, nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, that's a good lifespan for any show, yeah. We've got FBI Most Wanted on its second season, so it's getting renewed.
Yeah, that's a spinoff of the previously mentioned FBI.
And then Be Positive is a new show. That had the guy from Silicon Valley, right?
I mean, I know it was a Thomas Mitchelford, I believe is the actor's name. I didn't watch Silicon Valley, so.
Ah, okay. I recognize
Thomas Middleditch.
Middleditch is what I was thinking. Yeah. I knew he was in it. That's about all I know of the show.
Yeah, him and Emily Ashford are the stars of it. And I know it's a sitcom. I want to say it has something to do with an organ transplant or something, but I don't know that much more about it.
Okay. And then I know nothing of United States of Al.
Another sitcom started very, very long, starring, I'm going to massacre this name, Adhir Kaleem, possibly, and Dean Norris. Those are the two. Dean Norris, of course, is the actor I know from it, but yeah.
Okay. And then next up, we've got Blue Bloods. How many seasons has that one been going? I was going to say, that's been going on for quite some time. That's the show that's got Tom Selleck on it, right?
It is the Tom Selleck and the Wahlbergs. This was the 11th season.
Yeah, wow. But if it's getting the audience and it seems to be doing all right, no reason to not keep going with it.
Yeah, it's a Friday night show, has found an audience, not the youngest audience out there, but consistent in that spot for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah. And then just below that is the new Magnum PI, which is not the Tom Selleck show. And that's, what, on its third season?
That is on its third season, starring Jay Hernandez. Yep.
So that seems to be doing all right. We talked about NCIS New Orleans, which is ending. Then we get to the first show that I've watched on this, which is MacGyver. And not surprised they ended the show after the season. Alas, I think the writers were, because they'd clearly written the season figuring they'd get another season to kind of wrap stuff up. So my sister and I have watched the whole season. We've already recorded an episode. It'll go up in a couple of weeks.
And that was the fifth season.
That was fifth and final season, yeah.
Yep.
And they'd clearly set some stuff up that they were going to play out. And part of it was they'd switched showrunners this season. They had to pick up from where they left off prematurely last season, because they had a really short season last time, and I think half of this season was stuff they'd mostly shot last season.
Okay.
So it took about halfway into the season before they're even... I mean, they've talked about, oh, we're in the pandemic, but before they do kind of their pandemic episode. And then it was, okay, here's what we're doing for this season. So it was very much kind of a transitional season.
Mm.
And then they end the series. So it was a unfortunate set of events, but, it is what it is. So, but again, 5 seasons, they had their chance.
Yeah, they did. And they were, unfortunately, they got added to that Friday night lineup. Originally it was Blue Bloods and Hawaii 5-0 in them. Mm-hmm. And then when Hawaii 5-0 ended, it got replaced with Magnum, and unfortunately, it just kind of did the worst of those shows, I believe, every season it was on. Again, not horribly well, not it didn't do horribly, it just never reached the success of some of those other Friday shows on CBS.
Well, and it wasn't a bad show, but there's the obvious comparison point to the previous MacGyver,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't hold up. It's just a very different type of show. Let's see, then we got SEAL Team.
Which is an interesting one.
Moving over to Paramount Plus?
Yeah, so apparently it got renewed for another season, but they're only going to air 4 of them on CBS. I'm not sure what that's about. That's one of the oddest announcements I've ever seen. My guess is they needed some filler. Said, well, why don't you give us more SEAL Team? And the production company wasn't going to make just 4. So they ordered 9 or 12 or something and said, okay, we're going to air 4 and we'll put the rest of them over on CBS Paramount Plus.
That is odd.
It really was.
Because it seems like in some cases we're seeing stuff from either streaming services or overseas getting repurposed for quote-unquote original content on network TV.
And we're going to see that at the very bottom of this list, and we're going to see a lot of it in the next couple of networks.
Yeah, yeah. Now the next item down on the list is Bull. That finished its 5th season, which was fairly short and frankly surprised me that it had ended. It took my sister and I a week or two to realize it was over and not just taking a break for a week. We did record an episode on that. That'll get up in a little bit. This is the time of year where we wind up with a lot of TV episodes, so some of these may take a little bit to get released.
Yeah.
What's interesting with that is they're losing an actor going into next season, and it's one of the main actors. It's the guy who plays Benny Colon, the lawyer. There was some behind-the-scenes drama that seemed to lead to him exiting the show, and...
That's Freddy Rodriguez, isn't it?
Freddy Rodriguez, yeah.
Yeah, he's leaving, okay.
Great actor, I thought doing a great job on the show, but it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust the show for that. They do have a precedent on this show for how to handle somebody leaving. I hope they don't follow it, because I felt the way they handled the character of Cable leaving after the, I guess it was the second season or something, was pretty poorly done. But we'll see what happens there. But that seems to be a show that definitely has its following.
Yep, again, smaller and older, but it is consistent.
Yeah. It did a good job handling the pandemic, and it definitely leaned into that this season, and I would expect them to lean into it next season with kind of aftermath issues, because they periodically do kind of a grab from the headlines kind of a thing.
Yeah, and the next show, or not the next show, but we'll get to another one, I believe did the same thing.
Yeah. Unicorn, was that the one that had the guy from Justified, Walter Goggins?
Walter Goggins was the star. It was a sitcom. He was a widow. No, I'm sorry, widower. And all his friends were trying to get him back out dating again. Yeah, it was a sitcom. The pandemic certainly didn't help it. It wasn't doing overly well to begin with, but it had a lot of stops and starts. It had time slot issues at the beginning, and obviously had last year. So, yeah.
I remember hearing about it when it first came out, but then it just kind of dropped off my radar entirely. Just didn't seem to get any real buzz or anything. At least not that I heard, so yeah.
Yeah, no, it didn't.
Now, All Rise, it was one of the first shows to try to come back with the pandemic and stuff, and I think they did an episode, it might have been last season, where they did it all from their iPhones and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the show I was mentioning when you're talking about. Yeah, I don't think I watched a single episode of Entertainment that even mentioned the pandemic. But yeah, I know shows like All Rise, and he was mentioning how Bull kind of tried to, or did.
Yeah, Bull did, MacGyver did, as did SWAT.
Yeah.
So there are some that they leaned into it, some they acknowledged it, and a few others they just kind of, you know, ignored it. And I get all of those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's going to come a point where 10 years from now, some kid who's just old enough to watch some of these shows, but young enough to not really remember the whole pandemic, is going to be watching some of them saying, why this season are they wearing all these masks and stuff? What's up with that? You know, it's going to be interesting to see how some of this plays out in perpetual reruns or streaming services later.
Yeah, and again, cancel after two seasons, that one might just kind of disappear.
Yeah, I would expect that one would. SWAT was kind of interesting this season. They acknowledged the Black Lives Matter protests. They acknowledged the pandemic. They had one actor who was out, it felt like most of the season. Literally, he was phoning it in for some episodes. I think he had an injury and stuff, and there's some behind-the-scenes things that are preventing him from doing kind of the action-heavy role he'd been doing.
Mm-hmm.
We still haven't watched the finale, but we'll record an episode after that. But that also had, they like introduced a new team member, but then it seemed like only one writer seemed to know about the character or whatnot. So, shorter season, I think they had more planned than they had room for. But it was still, I think they did a good job, and it was funny because this is a SWAT team. They drive the van, they get out of the van, they go do their thing. You can't have the six people in the van during the pandemic for shooting reasons and such. So invariably, as we're watching that, my sister would be, oh, watch this, because they'd cut to where they're clearly all running out from behind the van, but none of them were clearly in the van if you're paying attention. It was hilarious. But all in all, I think they did a really good job dealing with a lot of the challenges of the pandemic, both in how they acknowledged it and how they filmed around it.
Yeah, interesting.
And then Manhunt Deadly Games there at the bottom. I haven't even heard of that one.
That was a show originally on the Spectrum Network.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it originally started, it was going to be a true crime kind of anthology.
Uh-huh.
I believe the specifics of the four episodes they aired were about her Richard Jewell.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, it's a fascinating case. With everything else going on, certainly didn't want to, I don't think many people wanted to go back to that particularly dark period.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I said, it was a true crime anthology. I believe it's on Netflix now if you guys want to watch it, including a few more episodes. But yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. For it to be a Spectrum show, which is a cable network, right? Let me rephrase that, a cable provider.
Cable provider, yep.
That was doing its own original stuff, and we'd seen mm-hmm. one or two of their other shows go network.
Yeah, you'll see another, at least one more coming up on the list here when we get to Fox.
Okay. But then for it to go from cable provider to network to streaming service and stuff, that's hilarious.
Well, to be fair, the other one on Fox is doing the same thing. The network airings, and again, it's not like Netflix is taking over and doing more of them.
Right. They're just re-airing it.
Netflix is just re-airing them. And again, it got enough exposure on being on network television.
Yeah.
That Netflix was willing to, you know, pay whatever fees were needed, and they probably got a good enough deal. They said, hey, why not? Maybe people will watch it.
Well, and from Spectrum's point of view, I mean, you pay to produce the show so you can say you've got original content. You get a win there.
Mm-hmm.
You get it on network TV. You get some more money from that and a little more exposure. It goes on to Netflix and stuff. You get more money there, a little bit more exposure. It seems like it's a win all the way around. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else on CBS?
Nope, not at all.
Let's go head over to CW. I've watched a few more of these shows, but not the top-rated one there of Supernatural. Now, you've got that listed as season 16 or 15.5. What's up with that?
What is up with that? So, Supernatural was supposed to air mostly in the second half of last year.
Mm-hmm.
They aired 6 of their 13 episodes, and they said, we're done. Put those final 7 in the can and put them out this season.
Ah, so kind of a split season sort of a thing.
Yeah, these are the 7 episodes that were originally filmed as the end of season 15.
Okay. That kind of makes sense. And again, not too dissimilar to what seemed to happen with, like, MacGyver, where they had what looked like was going to be another 6 or 8 episodes for the end of last season. The pandemic hit, they paused production, and they just said, well, we'll use them next time.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
In the case of Supernatural, it might have... I think 4 of these 7 were already fully produced, and CW literally just chose to sit on.
I think that makes sense, because it's easier to get people hyped about a 7-episode run versus, like, a 3-episode run.
Yes.
At that point, you would just do it as a one-night event, and it's kind of a what's the point, almost.
Yeah.
So I can understand that rationale. Now the next, or what will be the highest ongoing show, Superman and Lois. It's good to see it's doing well. It's one of the few that I think's beaten out The Flash, because it used to be The Flash was kind of one of the top CW shows.
That is true. It's also, it got a fairly strong bump from its first episode. And again, CW, we're talking much smaller numbers.
Yeah.
The first episode had a 0.37 rating and a 2.4 share. Since then, it's averaged a 2.6 with about a 1.6 share. So, you know, still doing okay. It would still be in second regardless, even if you took out that first episode.
Mm-hmm.
But that number's a little higher than it. If the season was longer, it probably would continue to fall more to that 2.6 range.
Well, it had an interesting thing where it went for like 6 episodes. I forget if they had to pause production or not, but then they paused airing it, used that time slot for Supergirl
mm-hmm.
for a handful of, you know, another, you know, 6 episodes of that, and then flip back to Superman and Lois. So I think there's some little bit of a time-sharing confusion kind of going on there. And while I'm enjoying the show, it's a lot more of a almost standard CW kind of family drama than superhero thing. Really hadn't tied into the Arrowverse much yet, which is funny because it very clearly and blatantly spun out of Supergirl.
I haven't watched Supergirl in a while. It felt like it was coming out of Crisis.
Well, they had set up this Superman and Lois in Supergirl, and then Crisis was the last time they'd been seen as part of that.
Got it.
And they changed things up in Crisis to where instead of a newborn kid, they had, you know, teenage twin sons. And it's interesting show. They're doing some fun stuff there. But I think if this had not been during the pandemic, we definitely would have seen crossovers between shows. And I think that show would have been much more acknowledged of the Arrowverse and by the Arrowverse.
That's right. We didn't get a crossover this year.
Not at all.
I thought of that.
Well, we sort of almost did in one show. The Flash is obliquely mentioned in Black Lightning and apparently off-screen dropped off some equipment. But yeah, that was the extent of it this season.
Interesting.
But I mean, part of it is some of these shows started a little late in the game. One or two of them had barely aired any episodes.
Particularly in season. Yeah. Some of these have aired a couple since the season ended. They're still new shows.
Yeah, well, I've only watched, I think, 3 or 4 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, because it just came back.
Yep.
Whereas one or two others have finished their run already, like Black Lightning. But Flash is still doing well for them, so that's good. They're losing 2 cast members over the course of the season, and they're bringing another character in, unsure if he's going to recur beyond the season or not.
I watched the first 4 or 5 episodes of this season, and just I haven't been motivated to go back, which is sad. It was my favorite of the Arrowverse shows, probably, until that point.
Well, this was another one where they had to clean up the storyline from the end of last season.
Yes.
And kind of did another arc after that. And it's funny because the arc they did with the various forces may be one of the first times one of these Arrowverse, or really any show, has adapted a story that was told after the series started. Because in a lot of these cases, they've got decades of material to work with, so they got plenty of stuff to pull from. So for them to have pulled from part of the Flash mythos of fairly recent years was a little surprising.
Interesting.
And they did a decent job adapting it. I just didn't feel the original material was that adaptation worthy.
Yeah, I didn't know it was adapted. I wasn't thrilled with the ending of the part that ended this season, and I wasn't overly impressed with the beginning of the new one either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and some of these shows being up in Canada, they're able to get like their leads back over, but Canada's very much pushing for, if you can use Canadian talent, do so. And of course, they've got a huge talent pool up there, so that's not any kind of a limitation or anything.
Well, but Canada always has.
Oh, yeah.
Canada's got a ton of rules, and for productions, you've got to use a certain percentage of Canadians. Not just actors, production people, writers,
the whole
all
thing.
Kinds of things.
The Canadian content restrictions, they just amp that up, I think.
Yeah.
But like one of the recurring characters for a bit on The Flash was Ennis Esmer, who I kind of see as the Canadian Greg Grunberg. You know, there are a couple of shows he's just, he's always in or whatever. He's a talented actor, too. But I think if they had had not the pandemic and could have, you know, cast the net a little wider and stuff, I don't know if he would have gotten that job or not. Certainly did a great job with it, but, you know, it was kind of interesting. And they've still got, I want to say, at least a third of the season left to go. Because that one didn't start until January or February, maybe. Maybe later. So, and then All-American, I'm not watching, so can't really speak to. Kung Fu, I did watch the pilot of that because I was curious. And that's made it to the list of things my sister and I may watch if we get some time.
Really? So it was enjoyable?
It was interesting. I'm only passingly familiar with the original Kung Fu and Kung Fu The Legend Continues. This seemed to be completely disconnected from all of that stuff for the most part.
Yeah, this was a remake of the original, right?
They've got a essentially college-age girl who's, you know, on an overseas trip, gets kind of fed up, and winds up at a monastery, decides she likes it, stays for a few years, and then heads home. And it looked like they were setting up an ongoing kind of antagonist and stuff like that, to where, in addition to whatever, you know, problem of the week they would have, there was an ongoing plot line, it looked like. And actually, at a high level, it almost reminded me a little of the Jackie Chan Adventures kind of high-level plot.
Okay.
But it looked like fun, so that's one that we may go watch at some point. Now, The 100, is that the same as The 100?
Yes. And again, those were the final 2 episodes of its last season, which they decided not to air after everything kind of shut down last year, and they aired them in September to get them a September rating. That was only 2 episodes. Again, it was the last 2 episodes of the finals.
Did they not have them totally done to air previously?
They did.
Oh, wow. Interesting choice.
Yep.
That just seems like holding just 2 episodes. I don't know about that.
See, the CW, though, had a bunch of repurposed
stuff. But when we get to the bottom of the list, it seems like most of it's repurposed stuff.
Yes, which makes sense. Yeah, Supernatural and The 100, they aired September, October to, you know, help that. There was no actual new shows till January of 2020.
Yeah.
So to get anything in that fall season, they held two of their more popular legacy shows, the last few episodes to air in that September.
Okay. Just so, again, they had something.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Riverdale is the Archie Comics stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched the pilot of that, and that was it.
Okay.
So, haven't gone back to it in years.
I watched the first two seasons. I kind of enjoyed it. You know, it's very teen, angsty CWE, but I still enjoyed the first season or two.
It just seemed like such a different take on the characters that wasn't what I needed.
Yes, other than the names, they had very little in common with the Archie comics.
Yeah, it just seemed to be an attempt to cash in on the there's interesting comic book properties kind of thing. Now we've got Supergirl next up. That one's ending at the end of this season. They've only aired, again, a handful of episodes because it seemed to be sharing a time slot with Superman and Lois. So we still have the bulk of that season left to go. And with the next one, Batwoman, man, that was interesting because they've replaced the title character. So we've got a new Batwoman this season. This is one of the actresses from God Friended Me. And I think they actually did a good job replacing Batwoman, making the show work around that. It's still as much a show about Alice, the villain, as Batwoman, the hero. And there's a very different dynamic there. It's looking like another Bat Family character might show up soon. But yeah, that one, it's interesting because they also did end up recasting the Kate Kane character. So I'm not sure what the game plan is with that, but they've been telling some interesting stories this season.
So they recast Kate and still made someone else Batwoman?
Well, they made somebody else Batwoman and then recast Kate, because Kate's only shown up like a little bit in the last episode or two.
Okay.
So it's not like they kind of did both simultaneously.
Interesting.
They gave this new character of Ryan Wilder at least about half the season without Kane. Kate Kane was being mentioned, and there was a, is she alive, is she dead, you know, which is, again, spinning off the what happened to her twin sister in the first season. And it, story-wise, it made sense. But they've definitely changed up that show quite a bit. I think if you were liking first season, you should definitely continue. If you weren't and were thinking, well, if they'd only replaced the lead character, guess what? They did. So it's, I think it's accessible if you just jump on the second season if you wanted to.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first season. That said, I realized very early on, Rachel Sarkin was mm-hmm. the star of that show. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
And the most entertaining part, and while I enjoyed it, I didn't want to come back for an Alice show, I guess is the best way to say it.
Well, and they've made the dynamic between Alice and the new Batwoman interesting. This is one of, I think, the smoother character replacements that I've seen in shows of recent years.
Oh, well, hey, that's good to know.
So, now, I don't think I'd realized they'd, maybe I didn't, just forgotten, they'd repurposed the Swamp Thing series.
Yep. Let's not forget Black Lightning, who did also have its final season.
I skipped over that, didn't mean to. Yeah, Black Lightning.
I really enjoyed that show for the most part.
Have you watched that season?
I have not watched the end of this season.
My sister and I did. We've recorded on that. That'll go up in probably a month or so, because, again, we got a lot of episodes before it. They did a backdoor pilot for Painkiller, which didn't get picked up. And they made some very interesting decisions narratively this season. And while they did some good stuff, there are a couple that's like, really, that's where you chose to go? And it's funny because I think they knew going in this was going to be their last season.
Okay.
But it felt rushed, particularly at the end.
Really? Interesting.
And it's funny, the Painkiller backdoor pilot, I don't know how they thought that would have gotten picked up. It just had all of the hallmarks of things that it's like, yeah, that's not in its favor. And it wasn't bad necessarily, but for a network TV show, I didn't think it had much of a chance.
Yeah.
But I've got a whole episode with my sister on that for more information.
Awesome.
So yeah, Swamp Thing again, repurposed, interesting. And then DC's Legends of Tomorrow, I mean, that just started a few weeks ago.
Yes.
So they held that one back, which is not unusual for that show. It's done kind of the summer season sort of thing before.
Absolutely. Yeah, not unusual for that show, not unusual for the CW. And then this season, everything's kind of wonky anyways.
Yeah. Now we start to hit, it seems like, a ton of stuff that's repurposed material. A lot of this I don't know that I've even heard of. So, like, what is Dead Pixels?
That was... I want to say that was a horror show that they had on Seed, and they aired one or two trying to convince people to go over to Seed and watch the rest of them.
They really haven't been pushing Seed that much that I've been seeing, or maybe I've just been ignoring it, because I tend to skip commercials. But there was a point where that was getting a bit more of a push, I felt.
Yeah, most of these are either from CW Seed, from CBS's kind of random weird division of produced shows before CBS Plus, and Canadian stuff.
Okay. I'm not familiar with Coroner or Devils or Tell Me a Story.
Tell Me a Story is the one it was on Seed. Think Once Upon a Time / Fables, but a little darker.
Okay.
Well, more like Fables, a little darker than Once Upon a Time. It's on, or has been on Seed. I think CBS had produced it as a web series for CBS.com, again, before they had a full-on streaming service. I want to say there's 3 seasons of it already out there.
Wow. Okay. Hey, if you've got other content and you've got space to fill in the schedule, makes sense to use the other content.
Yep. Actual new shows, though, we do have Nancy Drew in here.
Mm-hmm. That's on its 2nd or 3rd season?
I want to say 2nd.
Okay.
Nancy Drew.
Charmed.
Charmed.
And then I think Dynasty is the other one that's new.
Which, man, we saw some actual 0.0s this year. Nielsen started adding digits to the rating. We started seeing some real zeros. Dynasty is purely being produced for Netflix at this point, and they air it to keep Netflix happy, but it does not do particularly well.
Now, one of the repurposed ones is Bulletproof. That was a BBC show, maybe?
Okay. I thought it was Canadian, potentially, but...
I thought it had the guy who was one of the companions for Doctor Who in the first season or so of the revival.
It starred Noel Clark and Ashley Walters.
Noel Clark, and he's had some stuff in the news lately that didn't look good. That I think was kind of, I think it may have even killed off the show.
Yeah.
I don't know any of the details about the story, but somebody said he did something, you know, he shouldn't have or whatever. And, you know, scandal sets in and does not go well for career or show sometimes.
Yeah, and again, this is more British. It has 3 seasons or whatever you want to call it for a total of 17 episodes. So yeah, BBC makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, they do series, which tend to be, you know, 4 to 8 episodes depending.
Yep.
But hey, it works for them and they tell some good stories. So, and then I am unfamiliar with Trickster, The Outpost, and Pandora.
The Outpost, it was a sci-fi thing. Yeah, it was like a fantasy world. Everyone in like a family's killed, and like the daughter survives and is on a revenge mission, and she has some powers of some sort.
Okay.
Again, there's 3 or 4 seasons of that out there somewheres.
Mm-hmm.
Trickster. I'm not familiar with this at all, and I'm reading the description and not familiar with it at all. And it's not ringing any bells. Pandora. Another sci-fi show. It's like a Starfleet Academy show. It's set several hundred years in the future, and it follows a character who's a space training academy.
Oh, that actually sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like there's at least 2 seasons of that out there, and I believe the show is Australian.
I may look into that. Concept at least sounds good. Well,
yeah.
Anything else on CW?
No, nothing really.
I think they're adding another night of programming next season?
They are. They will air Sunday night. Yes, that is true. They opted for that rather than adding the 3rd hour, which I find interesting. On the other hand, it only adds 2 hours, as opposed to adding the 10 o'clock hour would add 5.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
Well, and they've got Black Lightning ending, Supergirl ending, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what they do next season, yeah.
Well, and Supernatural and The 100, which kind of were already ending as well. Again, CBS owns half that network. We have to see what they want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, should we jump over to Fox?
Sure.
I don't think there is a single thing... There's not a single thing on this that I've watched.
Well, you've watched some Simpsons at some point.
I don't know that I've watched a full episode.
Really? Wow.
It's just not my sense of humor.
Fair enough. 32 years, it's hard to believe you haven't seen a single episode, but it is what it is.
I've seen clips, but I don't think I've seen a single full one. So, but we got 911 and 911 Lone Star top in the list.
Absolutely, yep.
Then we've got, again, that juggernaut of The Simpsons.
32 years in.
That's insane.
Renewed through 35.
Wow. There's going to come a point where it eventually goes off the air, and there's going to be an entire generation that will be experiencing TV without The Simpsons for the first time. Whether they've watched it or not, again, it's been on forever. It's crazy.
I mean, I'm not particularly young. That show debuted when I was in junior high.
Well, I'm particularly not younger, so I think I was in college at least. I might have been almost out of college, depending when that started.
You're not that much older than me.
When did that one start?
89.
89? Yeah, I was halfway through college.
Okay, fair enough.
So, but more power to him for sticking around that long. Again, animated, I think, has a huge advantage there, as long as you can keep the voice cast, and they have, for the most part.
And again, there's plenty of talented voice actors as well, so even if you lose the voice cast, they're much easier to replace.
Yes, yes. You could definitely swap some people in and out if you needed to and wanted to. Now, what is Call Me Cat?
That was Mayim Bialik's new sitcom where she played a gal that ran a cat cafe, which was literally a cafe where people were encouraged to bring or play with cats, like the animals.
Interesting. Okay, and it's getting renewed?
Yeah, it had a heck of a cast. Susie Quartz was in it as her mother. What's his name was in it? Leslie Jordan is kind of the quirky.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a co-worker, kind of a quirky, fun character. He usually is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a love interest, Cheyenne Jackson, Caleb Pratt's a friend. Yeah, it had a pretty good cast. It's a lot of fun. They had a lot of fun with the sitcom. I don't want to say it's 100% self-aware, but there was some breaking of the fourth wall, and yeah, it was a unique kind of fun, interesting, goofy show.
It definitely sounds different than a lot of other stuff, and I think that's advantageous, so yeah.
Yep.
Okay, then we've got Family Guy for, 19 seasons. It's, of course, getting renewed. Great North, another comedy I'm unfamiliar with.
That's another animated one. That's a new animated show. Yep.
Okay. The Resident, new drama that's a medical procedural?
Yeah, but not that new.
Oh.
Let me look it up. I want to say that's 3-4 seasons, if not more. Started in 2018.
Okay, so a good couple of seasons.
Yep, just completed its 4th season.
Okay. And we've got Bob's Burgers going for 11 seasons, getting renewed.
Yep, and more animated.
Yeah, they seem to do well with the animated stuff over on Fox.
They've got that Sunday evening with The Simpsons where they just keep surrounding it with other animated stuff. Yeah, it goes back to years ago with King of the Hill, which ran for a million years and hasn't been on for a million years, and Family Guy, which came and went. And they've kind of filled that whole Sunday night with various animated shows over the years to some better and less decent receptions.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got Last Man Standing, that one's ending.
That was the continuation of the Tim Allen show that got canceled over on ABC. And then they were revived, and did 2 or 3 seasons over on Fox.
Ah, okay.
Bless the Hearts is another animated series. It's not going to make it past its 2nd season. That was one of the other advantages Fox had, is Fox did, basically, as soon as we kind of began to see the pandemic last season, Fox renewed and ordered anything animated they could think of. Most of it's done overseas. Most of it got back in production. So that was one of Fox's strategies for dealing with the pandemic, is we can crank out a ton of animated stuff, mostly done in Korea, and have it ready.
Yeah, well, and that's something that all the precautions you need to do for filming during the pandemic and stuff are just way easier.
Exactly.
Because you got you know, the voice actors in their own vocal booth and stuff like that. You don't need to gather the cast all at once. You don't have the logistics of you know, in-person filming.
Yep.
And if you've got some people who are in the animation staff that fall ill or whatever, I mean, you can swap them out for others.
Yeah, and again, like I said, most of the actual animation work is done in Korea. And as I remember, they were reopening long before most of the rest of the world.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't watched Prodigal Son, but I think that might be one that my sisters mentioned.
I really enjoyed that show. Unfortunately, it is ending after its second season. It's basically a procedural who is a profiler. The twist there is he is the son of a serial killer,
mm-hmm.
played by Michael Sheen, actually.
Ah, interesting.
Who does a wonderful job as his serial killer father. Lou Diamond Phillips kind of played his surrogate father and, you know, head of police officer that he answered to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was kind of a fun show. I actually really enjoyed that show.
Cool. LA's Finest is another one that I think was a Spectrum original.
It is. And again, one that ended up, Netflix now has it.
Yeah, and again, repurposed here, because, well, why not?
Yeah.
Filthy Rich, that's a drama I am unfamiliar with.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where that came from. But yeah, it was Kim Cattrall's show. I don't remember much more about it.
Okay. Again, there's tons of shows. You can't remember them all, certainly, yeah.
Exactly.
And I'm clearly not watching anywhere near the amount of TV that I used to, because there's a lot of these that I just have no idea what is, like The Moodies.
The Moodies was a family comedy drama thing that they tried right around like Thanksgiving and did not do well at all.
Okay. And Next, that's a drama they repurposed from somewhere?
Yeah, that one I don't remember at all. I don't remember, and let's be real, I don't remember anything about either.
Okay, well, these, again, are far enough down in the ratings that probably a lot of people never heard of or watched.
Well, and again, these, most of this repurposed stuff was stuff from September and October, and we've gotten kind of through all that and back to more normal shows, and I have just long forgotten those press releases.
No, that's understandable. Particularly, yeah, if it was early in the season before it felt like the TV season had really kind of started up, I think there was, again,
I want to say Next was a sci-fi show.
That wouldn't surprise me.
It had, like, an alien, or there was some kind of, like, virus spreading. I don't want to say virus, that's not the right word. But something akin to zombieism or vampirism or something, but I believe it was alien in nature.
According to Wikipedia, the series centers on the efforts of a homeland cybersecurity team to counter a rogue AI with the ability to constantly improve itself.
Okay, it's AI. There you go, it wasn't. Okay.
Which actually doesn't sound too bad. I don't recognize any of the names I'm seeing here.
I actually had a friend who normally doesn't like science fiction who loved that show. He thought it was the best thing ever.
Hmm. Interesting. Apparently that was not the general consensus.
No.
Shall we move over to NBC?
Sure.
There is, I think, only one thing out of this list that I watched.
Well, now, NBC is interesting in that they've got several shows that we still don't know the fates of. They've still got episodes to air, and my guess is they're probably going to cancel all of them, maybe not all of them. But yeah, we can talk about that as we get there.
Yeah. This Is Us is topping the list for them. They're renewing it for a final season.
Yep.
And we've got, well, really the next five are all kind of...
Yeah, then we've got the Dick Wolf Block.
Yeah, the franchises. The Chicago Fire, Med and PD, and then Law and Order, Organized Crime, and SVU.
Yep.
SVU having gone for 22 seasons.
Yep.
That's just insane.
And Organized Crime being new, but they brought Chris Milani back, so... It's new, but not entirely.
Well, makes sense. If you can stack the deck, a known name or whatever, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Young Rock, I've heard of, but I haven't watched. Is that any good?
I really enjoyed it, but I'm an old wrestling fan who's been following The Rock for 30 years, so...
Got it.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. Dwayne himself is on every episode, and they kind of bookend it. It's like him in the future, supposedly, like running for office or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing, like, sit-down interviews and, you know, his run for office, and he inevitably says, well, that reminds me of, and then fade to some story from his childhood.
So he's essentially doing the framing sequence.
Yes.
And we've seen that sort of a thing on a number of other shows.
Yep.
Not a bad concept, though.
No, well, and it's almost directly, Chris Rock did the same thing with a show called Everyone Hates Chris. Mm-hmm. He didn't necessarily do all the framing sequences, but a celebrity telling stories of their childhood and them being filmed was pretty much Everyone Hates Chris with Chris Rock.
Yeah,
10 years ago or so.
If he'd only named it, you know, Young Rock instead of Everyone Hates Chris, maybe they would have liked it.
There you go.
Live and learn.
Yep. Next is Manifest, which is one of the shows we do not know the fate of. It's a third season show. My guess is they're negotiating how much NBC is willing to pay for it and how cheap they're willing to make it to get that fourth season. This is about that plane that disappeared for a decade or whatever and then all of a sudden just showed back up.
Yeah, they pushed that 1 year at Comic-Con.
Yeah, the year it came out, I know NBC really pushed it as well. Again, we don't really know. I would expect to see it back. This is all about economics, and it's how cheap can the production company make it, and how much is the network willing to pay for it to get that fourth season.
That makes sense. Mr. Mayor, that's a comedy I am unfamiliar with.
That is Ted Danson's new show.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Where he plays like an eccentric rich guy who decides to run in an election where the mayor of Los Angeles is being recalled and wins. I watched an episode, wasn't particularly impressed.
I've liked him in past stuff, but...
Yeah, no. Cheers, I love. The Good Place, one of the best shows in the last 10 years.
I would agree with that, yeah.
I just didn't care for this one.
Keenan. I am unfamiliar with that one as well.
I haven't watched it, but it's Keenan from Saturday Night Live. And
From Keenan and Kel.
It's a sitcom he's doing.
Guy's talented, so...
He is.
Gotta be decent.
And that airs whatever night it is with the Young Rock, kind of, is the two, like, new sitcoms.
Interesting. Superstore, I have not watched, but I'm passingly familiar with. They've had activations and stuff at Comic-Con the last couple of years.
Yep, and it's coming to an end after 6 seasons.
New Amsterdam, I'm familiar with the title, but not this show. I think they've used that title about 5-10 years ago on a different show.
I believe this is a medical...
I think this is a medical drama, whereas the other one was a guy who lived forever.
Yeah, that is with Anthony Edwards, right?
I think so, because that one was really good. This one I know nothing about.
Yeah, this is Ryan Eggold. Yeah, it's a medical
procedural.
It's a medical procedural with a bunch of random politics stuff. It's like a public hospital or something. And there's a lot of he's breaking the rules or whatever. So yeah.
And then Transplant, that's repurposed. That was, what was that on?
I want to say Amazon original. No, it wasn't. I'm thinking of a different show. No, it was from Canada.
Oh, okay.
It's, yeah.
Well, Canada's got a ton of shows, so I'm not surprised some of them got repurposed.
Yeah.
Actually surprised a few more didn't. Now, this next one is one that I watched, I enjoyed, disappointed it didn't get picked up for a second season, but really not the least bit surprised, and that's Debris.
What was that? Not a show I know that much about.
The basic concept is 6 months ago from the start of the show, an alien spacecraft or whatever got, like, destroyed, and the debris rains down on Earth.
Okay.
And this is a procedural following two special agents, one American, one British, that are teamed up to go track down the debris.
Okay.
Because this debris can cause all kinds of, you know, science anomalies or whatever. You know, in the pilot, they find one at a hotel that caused a maid to, like, fall through 40 stories of the building and crash into the banquet hall at the bottom. You know, having passed through all the stories in between or whatever. And it was really well done. It actually had one episode. It was predominantly episodic with a through line across them. But then there was a couple episodes where it got a lot more serial narrative.
All right.
And there was one or two of them that were just really well done. And it's like, I've seen this kind of concept played out before, kind of, sort of, but they did it better than most of the times I've seen it.
Awesome.
And it ended on a note where it's like, you're not going to end it here. Because it's a sci-fi show. They start with a voiceover or text, text explaining it at the beginning that drops off about halfway through. And I think a lot of sci-fi shows on network television need that constant reminder for the audience of here's the premise, here's why it's not your standard procedural.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these kinds of sci-fi shows they're an uphill battle. They often don't make it to a second season.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as writers, you've got to always give yourself some place to go.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about Prodigal Son back on Fox. It came to an end and clearly was in the middle of a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, not everything can survive.
There's an art to having enough springboards and runway that you can go for the long haul, but also having those exit ramps that if you know you're done, you can get out gracefully.
But again, when you know you're done, it's a whole different thing. I'm not sure how many times that's the case.
Yeah, they didn't know. I think they were waiting to see what the final numbers were.
Exactly.
But I think in those sorts of cases, you owe it to the audience to end on a cleaner note.
Yep.
Where there's more, but you've gotten enough resolution that, you know, you're not, you know, annoyed. My sister and I really enjoyed this. This is one of the ones we were keeping up with as it came out. We've recorded an episode on it. It'll come out in a couple of weeks.
Awesome.
So, it's good stuff. And we've got Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Another show. That one I'm expecting to be canceled in its second season. There's still episodes to air, though. Don't scare off any advertisers by telling them it's canceled yet.
Makes sense. And what is Connecting?
Connecting was an idea of how to do a pandemic show. And it was filmed as like Zoom meetings.
Wow. I can understand the desire to film that way and to try to make it connect and stuff, but that is such a risky gamble.
Yeah, and as you can see, the premise of it was like, it was a family that was experiencing what all the rest of us were experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd film their like weekly Zoom chats. As you can see, it didn't do very well.
I can see where it might have sounded okay on paper, but the reality is enough of us are spending enough time on Zoom that watching a TV show of people on Zoom, it's like, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Too close, too soon? Maybe revisit this in, you know, 5-10 years and we got a little distance from this, maybe?
Well, and to be fair, I think they aired it. I could be wrong. It might have just been done someplace else. Nancy Meyer, the writer-director, did the same thing with the Father of the Bride cast for, like, a reunion about the same time.
Hmm.
With Steve Martin, though, and with some of those really talented people and knowing it was a one-off, it worked a lot better.
Yeah, as a one-off, and particularly with, again, people like Steve Martin, I mean, yeah, that I might check out. But an ongoing comedy kind of thing, I don't know that it would last more than a few episodes for a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one that either it clicks or it very clearly does not. And I think the does not is the odds-on favorite, obviously, since it was canceled. But just on principle, I would have gone that way.
Yep.
Now, man, Blacklist is fairly low in this list.
It is.
But 8 seasons in and getting renewed?
Sony, I'm sure you made this dirt cheap. Just because, again, Sony not being tied to anybody has got to keep something on the air. We had this discussion with time travel show a few years ago.
Timeless.
Yeah. It airs on Friday. It routinely loses to Blue Bloods or Magnum or whatever, but it's got an audience. It's stable.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Sony can make it cheap enough just to keep making it, and NBC can pay little enough to it fills a time slot and gets us a consistent number. And we don't have to really waste resources trying to fill Friday night.
Hey, if it gets consistent numbers, I mean, it's predictable, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Exactly.
And I know nothing about Good Girls or Nurses.
Okay, so Good Girls, another show, second or third season. I believe it's like a group of moms that get desperate and rob a bank, and then you're dealing with whatever happens after that. That's another show I'm predicting will be canceled. Still has episodes to air,
mm-hmm.
much like Zoe's Playlist. Nurses was repurposed from somewhere, and it was a medical drama.
Ah. Oh, and by the way, when I recorded with Debris, it was right after that ended and before they'd announced it didn't get the second season.
Of course, yeah.
So, of course, we're talking about it on that episode of, well, maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Yeah.
Invariably, whenever we record on a show that's on the bubble like that, it seems like between the time I've edited it and get it released, the show gets axed.
Yep.
Or something else happens. Like, I think it happened last year with Batwoman of, you know, what are they going to do? Oh, well, they're going to recast, you know, whatever. Yeah, I think a lot of the shows this season just had a hard time in general picking up from where they left off, you know, figuring out how to film during the pandemic and such. And it And we got some good TV this season, but I think a lot of people were also busy just binge-watching other shows, and it just got out of the weekly habit of network TV to a degree.
I think part of it is, yes, that they got out of the habit. And I think another part of it was after 6 months or whatever of binging through everything, by the time, even in the wintertime, I think there was a part of it, a percentage of the population anyways, they just wanted to turn the screens off for a while.
That could be. Or even if they didn't, they'd gotten used to binging, so going week to week was hard.
Yeah, that's also true. I just know that I see like focus group and research stuff from various media sources, and the number of questions relating to and involving, do you feel you're watching too much TV? Are you trying to limit your kids' exposure to screens? All that kind of stuff. I'm seeing more and more of those, A, being answered in the affirmative, and B, being asked by the researchers.
I totally get that, because I think the amount of screen time that we have as a culture just shot through the roof over the last year or two with the pandemic. Because it used to be at the office, well, you're going to spend some time in meetings, you're not in front of a screen then. Well, now, you're in front of a screen for that.
Yep.
You know? And it definitely can get a little draining at times.
And children, without going to school, with school being on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you've got kids that want to, you know, watch some TV or something, and they go, they can be in front of a screen for, you know, 12, 14, 15, 18 hours a day if you allow it.
Well, and also, it's one thing to come home and watch TV when you've been socializing with people at work or school or whatever all day. It's different when you haven't had that kind of interaction to spend the evenings doing it and stuff, too. So I definitely think we're going to see some changes in television, both network and streaming and scripted and non-scripted and stuff. I just don't know that those changes have really worked themselves out yet.
I agree.
But it wouldn't surprise me if in another few years we look back at kind of what's happening then and what was happening before the pandemic and see some things that we can probably trace back to this changed during and because of the pandemic.
It's possible. But as we've been talking about for several years, broadcast television and the network and how that works, it's been changing before the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's going to be other changes that are just, this is the way it was sliding towards streaming anyways.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. We'll just have to wait and see. You know, there's plenty of great things to watch, though, which is your cue to plug the recommendations.
By the time this goes up, this is set to go up on June 25th. So, yeah, the recommendation roundtable. The last call for that at the moment is the end of June, which would be Wednesday, June 30th, the end of that night. I'll be probably over the 4th of July weekend putting together that recommendation roundtable together. So if you've got recommendations on streaming shows or TV shows or movies or board games or books or whatever, by all means, send them in. It's a good chance to kind of recommend to other people ways to spend the time that you've enjoyed and that they might like too.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I haven't been getting enough of clips and stuff to feel that it warrants keeping the recommendation roundtable going, but I at least want to kind of clear the queue out with what I've got and get a couple more clips to fill out that episode. And if people are interested in it continuing on maybe a quarterly basis or some other cadence or whatever, let me know. I know we've talked about for years, Sam and I and some others behind the scenes of, hey, wouldn't it be cool if there was a way, you know, like the Preview Spotlight, to recommend streaming shows or stuff like that, which with the pandemic is what really prompted me to start the recommendation roundtable.
Yep.
And we got some good feedback for the first couple, and then it just kind of, you know, dried up. So, but definitely there's a ton of shows that are on network TV, that are on streaming services, and some that are just, you know, in the backlist of material, because I've gone through and binge-watched a number of shows over the last year or so, some of which people might enjoy, some of which, just stuff I like.
Yeah, and, you know, as you can clearly see, I follow this stuff kind of on a day-to-day basis. John's like, what do you know about this? Not much. There was a lot of stuff you didn't know about. So, yeah, there's a lot. If there's something you're enjoying, let us know about it, because a lot of people might not know about it.
Yeah. And for that matter, if it makes sense to time a recommendation roundtable around the start of a new TV season or some such, so people can recommend new shows that they're enjoying and stuff, I'm certainly game for trying that. But yeah, there's a ton of options for how you can spend your free time. And the idea was to, you know, give people a vehicle for recommending how they thought people might enjoy it.
Yep.
Anything else?
I'm great.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.